Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well. This episode is our first here in October, and we're beginning a two-part series titled Things That Scare Us, cue our scary music, but really shouldn't. We thought we'd take a little bit of a fun approach this month. I'm not sure there really are actual scary things in the learning and design world, but...
Oh, there can be.
I suppose. And you're hearing here, before I move forward, I'm joined by our very favorite co-host, Jerry Zanstra. Jerry, do you want to just briefly introduce yourself for those that haven't listened?
Sure. Yeah, my name is Jerry Zanstra. I am the Chief Strategy Officer at Mindspring. I was one of the original founders of the original company, one of them anyway. And so part of my responsibility is to think strategically, hence the title, with people like Miriam. And we think hard about some of the challenges that happen in the learning industry and how we can resolve those challenges.
Yeah. And lately we've been talking a lot about immersive technology. Mm-hmm. And that is one of those things, even though we've talked about VR has been around for some time. I've read enough and listened enough that it is scary for people in our industry from a variety of standpoints, from the just not really understanding, like we have this sort of conceptual idea, but in reality, the cost or seeming, you know, what we assume the cost would be is scary. And then I think from a design standpoint, it requires skills that a lot of our teams don't have. And even instructional design from that standpoint, now we're talking about designing nonlinear experiences. So there's a lot to talk about. So that's also why I invited Jerry. So he's going to help us not be scared today.
Or at least intimidated, right? I mean, if you really want to get scared, we'll talk later on about our artificial intelligence. Yes. That's scary. But this is at least intimidating.
Yes, exactly. And I will set the stage for today to say that... our goal here is to do a little bit more of a high-level discussion on a variety of topics related to this. The podcast coming up later this month, we have a technical expert coming in, but Jerry and I both know our lanes.
That won't be me.
And it's not me either. So today what we wanted to do, though, is sort of set a foundation. So let's start there, Jerry. I even think there's some confusion, or there's been, I think, in probably the last 2 years, some blurring. Mm-hmm. It used to be very distinct. There's VR, which is virtual reality, and people, I think, have a concept of that. Mm-hmm. Then there's AR, augmented reality. But now we have this new term, sort of MR, mixed reality, sometimes MX, sometimes we call it immersive. So can you kind of unpack those three terms for us?
Sure. And let me add a fourth one. Okay, I think that's XR is sort of the general bucket for the technology, and it means you're extending reality. Reality can be extended in a number of different ways. It can be extended via augmented reality, which is you can still see the normal reality that you experience. It's just that things are layered over the top of them in wonderful ways and creative ways and helpful ways. In virtual reality, you leave the reality that you're in. So some people have been, and I've had this experience, you're put in a house fire.
Right.
And it's unbelievable. I mean, it the temperature in the room hasn't changed, but and especially if it has a sound element to it, but your eyes and your ears and your adrenal system is telling you that you are in a fire. Suddenly you're pouring sweat. Now, the room temperature hasn't changed, but you are in a different reality. Mixed reality is sort of like augmented reality on steroids.
Okay.
Augmented reality that you can manipulate and move around. So it's sort of a mixing of augmented reality and virtual reality. It's helpful for me to think in big buckets. Extended reality is adding or moving into. It truly is extending the reality that you can see. Mixed reality is most of the time you're still in your own reality. You have layers. Sometimes you can manipulate them. And then virtual reality where you've left the planet. I mean, you're in a different situation.
Right. No, I think that's helpful for our listeners, because a lot of times those words are bandied about and used differently by people. Yeah. Yep.
There's five people right now that are listening that are shaking their heads, going, he's got that absolutely wrong.
Yes.
And that's possible. But that has to do with the newness, I think, of the technology and the newness of the industry and the newness of using that technology inside of learning. So I think it's good to have some big buckets and allow a little variety in definition.
No, I totally agree. And I think a great way to define it is by thinking of where you are, which totally fits our approach. Like if we're learner-centric, we're using these for a learning experience. It's where is your learner? And I think at a very minimum level, people can be familiar with augmented reality and, you know, you pop open your IKEA, you're shopping for a sofa. Does that date me? What would I, a couch? I don't know. I didn't say Davenport.
I don't know. So you didn't say Davenport, which is a city in Iowa. But I think it makes you sound much more sophisticated.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
It's highbrow, if you will.
Well, if you're shopping for furniture, we'll leave it at that. And, you know, you have these apps on your phone now where you can hold it up in your room. You can see what it would look like. I'm still physically in my room, but I'm applying things. But now with, you know, this mixed reality, I might be able to manipulate it. I might be able to change colors. I might be able to move it around the room.
Yeah, you can do some of that in augmented reality already. Mixed reality is more you're interacting.
Okay.
Yeah, it's more interactive than just a thing over the top of the reality that you can see. It's reacting to you. You're reacting to it. So it's more like virtual reality.
So I know we just recently worked on a project where we were giving like a tour of an office space. Right. So I'm like physically walking through kind of a thing.
Yeah. Okay. That's augmented reality. You have, so wayfinding is what that's called. And so, and that has a lot of applications in things like hospitals. Mm-hmm. It has applications in retail stores. It has application in large manufacturing plants because in onboarding, you can actually walk around and see where things are, or people that are in fulfillment. They can see right where an item is without having to go inspect it. You can actually be led to the item that you need to pick. So there's all sorts of cool applications. And I think we're just scratching the surface of where all this is going
to
go.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And in fact, we're going to get to some of those examples later too, I think. So we have our definitions. I've done some reading lately, but I know you have your finger on the pulse of it too, just in terms of the state of the industry. So I remember probably, you know, 5 years ago, it was virtual reality is for sure the next thing. And we kind of really piled into that the best that we could. And there's some barriers to entry. And then we also discovered, well, now I need to ship headsets to everyone, or how do they participate? And so then it became, well, maybe AR is a better way to go. But where do you see our industry sitting right now?
There's a lot of interest in what I would call extended reality. Mm-hmm. Because it gives you the ability to show. And you can show without a person leading you by the hand through that thing. So it you know, pedagogically, it's sort of back to that one-on-one, right? I would love to sit at the feet of Aristotle. And it sort of gives you the ability to have that one-on-one kind of relationship, except the thing that you're interacting with is computer-generated rather than person-generated. And I think there's a lot of uncertainty yet. Much of this augmented and virtual and mixed reality or extended reality, as the big bucket, is intimidating in the sense of how many coders do I need to do this? So it's highly technically driven. Yeah. It is expensive. The results are better. I think it's unquestionable that the results are better.
Absolutely.
But, you know, do the results yet outweigh? And then you have learning teams and learning leaders that are saying, I know I'm seeing this everywhere. Do I have the budget? Do I have to involve our IT department? Do I have to go and hire, you know, $650 an hour coders to figure out how to do this? So the good news is that the technology is advancing quickly. And, you know, Miriam, you and I have talked about this before in webinars, but it's akin to when websites first came out. That's the most helpful framework for me.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Is for me to think about when websites, could anybody make a website? Yes. As long as you could code.
Right. You had to know your HTML.
Sure. Right.
Well, I dabbled for a little while.
I believe that's a brand of coffee. But you had to know how to code to do that. Right. And then WordPress and some other things came out where they took the coding part out of it. They handed you a prepackaged thing. And inside of that, you could be as creative as your talent and mind would allow you to be. We are coming to the point in mixed reality, virtual reality, and augmented reality, where that's the case, where the need for the coder is going way down, which means the cost is going way down,
and
the complexity is going way down, and the time is going way down. I remember when we first started our original company a dozen years ago or whatever, somebody asked us to make a 3D animation.
I remember.
You remember that. And it was like $125,000.
It was a lot of money.
Right. And it was, that conversation was over with quickly.
Yes, it was.
But what it takes now to make, so we're in that technology curve, and then we're in the early adopter curve.
Yes.
Many of the bigger companies, many of the Fortune 500 companies, I would imagine there are very few Fortune 500 companies, maybe even Fortune 1000 companies that haven't integrated some kind of augmented reality or virtual reality into some process in their system. It may be in learning, it may be in something else. It may be in fulfillment or quality control, something like that. But it is coming, I think. Virtual reality will remain a bit more limited because of the complexity of headsets.
Yeah.
I think augmented reality, or maybe better yet, mixed reality, is much easier to do, much more likely to be the majority of what's done in the future, and cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I was listening just the other day to a podcast, and they were talking about, again, sort of the field that we're in. So to differentiate for our listeners too, I mean, we're talking about more of this mixed immersive technology for the lay person. We're not talking about, I mean, the military has used these kinds of things, you know, very sophisticated. We're not designing those. We're not teaching people how to fly airplanes. But Even to that point, I mean, one of the things that as you were talking about the industry, there's some industries that are more uniquely suited or have more need than others.
Or they're ahead.
Certain situations, right.
Or they're ahead. I mean, you see it, as you've said, this has been around in military applications for many, many years, in flight simulators. I see enormous growth in the medical field.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I just talked to a friend last week, when we were out west. His son is deep into, surgery. He does organ transplants.
Wow.
And, much of this is being done. He's actually in Europe for 10 weeks learning how to use a combination of robotics and, extended reality. Right. So, and you can see it sort of makes itself obvious how medical can be an immediate thing, like 3D graphics and then into virtual reality and so on, learning how to, right. The higher the danger.
Right. That's one of the big things.
Yeah. The higher the danger, the more you want to be able to make your mistakes virtually.
First responders, or like you talked about firemen, those kinds of situations too. Yeah.
Yep. And then, another one that seems to me to be coming quickly is manufacturing.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Yeah, because you can see, you know, an assembly line or a complex set of steps that need to be done, and really with a fairly non-intrusive means of providing that reality to you, you can see step one is this, step two is this, and this is what it's supposed to look like. We've done some of that, and some of what we call inspect and collect, which is, you know, instead of hand inspecting parts, the part is actually inspected and compared automatically, digitally, and augmented reality is a part of that. So the early adopters seem to be manufacturing, earliest military, healthcare, manufacturing, but we're seeing a lot of this in retail too, where some retail shops are, you can put the shoes on your feet, or you can walk into a store using your iPhone and augmented reality, and you don't really need a salesperson.
Right.
The salesperson at that point, you can be your own. The AR is actually your salesperson. The salesperson, the virtual salesperson, is telling you what's available, what sizes. Nobody's running in the They're back not, to find out, right? Oops, I don't have a size 12 in that. So, okay. So, yeah, I think those applications, as creative people who are experts in learning, as they get their hands on the technology and are able to play, I think our learning industry is going to see, you know, enormous growth in application of this. Is it scary? Yes, it is, because it involves a technology that you're not familiar with. It might change your process. And it might be expensive at first, but again, the expense is coming down, and so it's gonna require the learning industry to learn some new tools. At the end of the day, though, learning science trumps all.
I was just gonna say that part doesn't change. I mean, we're always growing in our knowledge of how to apply it.
Yep. But our learning science doesn't change for how human beings acquire and apply the things that they learn and need to learn. If you start to think of this as a tool rather than a new thing, it's a tool.
Yes.
And in 20 years, there's going to be another cool thing.
Right.
But our basic understanding of anthropology and how human beings learn, that's not going to be altered. Shouldn't be altered unless there's some discovery there that, you know, is new to all of us, or there's more data. But these are tools. And if you learn to think of them like tools, then it's far less intimidating, and the tool is getting simpler and less expensive to use.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really think, like, we talked about industries there, but I had also done some reading just in terms of, the way that it's sort of being, and I think this helps learning professionals think about it too, is different categories of use. Like you mentioned, something that's too dangerous, something that can't be done in real life, or cost prohibitive, right? Like, you shut down the whole line to onboard people. Like, how expensive is that? Or work or design something that's not yet built. Like, you referenced, like, either we'd seen a case study of the plane wasn't even finished, but flight attendants were already being trained on where to put the baggage away. And then I heard a very cool one the other day, and I think this is where learning professionals start to get excited. So it was in the medical field, but it was teaching caregivers, health professionals, to develop empathy. And I have no idea how they did this. It seems amazing. But the virtual experience was simulating what it felt like to have dementia. And the caregivers were not, the health professionals, I don't know how it simulates that you're forgetting things or not knowing where they are, not being able to speak, but it put them in an environment that you cannot create in real life.
Right.
But you're helping teach soft skills. You're teaching empathy or compassion. And to me, that's crazy. I still want to know how they designed that.
It's wonderful.
It's amazing.
And we've all done, some of the best learning that we do is in scenarios, right? And the scenarios used to be written out. So you read a scenario and then you have, you know,
role play,
right? You role play sometimes in instructor led. And this is starting to blend AI into extended reality a little bit, but where what you're doing, is actually being interacted with. So the choices that you make are determining things that are coming at you and changing. And virtual reality, I think, is wonderful for that.
Right.
It, you know, if you can role play with a real live situation, and it might be an
and it alters
problem,
depending on how you respond. Like, that's very interesting.
Which is what human beings do.
Exactly.
Right. And so it becomes a very real reality.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, in a second, you know, I do want us to kind of talk about different approaches we can take to mm-hmm. creating these and how a learning designer thinks through them. But we did talk a little bit already about some of the barriers or why, you know, organizations might be resistant, even understanding it's important, but resistant a lot of times because of cost and just that fear of the unknown, which, like right. you said, makes it scary. I'm just going to reference this and I'll put the link in the show notes. But I found a really interesting article from Wired Magazine, and they talked about this kind of technology in 5 different levels, depending on who you were talking to, telling the story differently. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was just fascinating. So if you have resistance in your organization, or we've talked about this before, talking to the CFO, we're going to talk all about finances right. and how shutting down a line or not shutting down a line right. saves so much money. But I'll put the link in because it was just very interesting. Some of it was even based on age. Okay. How you talk to people in your organization based on age, again, not making assumptions, but knowing that people, some of your employees who are younger, typically, again, we're not assuming, but have some more real life experience mm-hmm. and how you tell your story differently to them than someone who might be, this technology is scary because they don't have a frame of reference. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really interesting approach too mm-hmm. when we face resistance. But let's pivot. Like I said, let's okay. talk about what kind of approach is available. Like, I'm a learning team manager.
Right.
I don't know what to do, but I know this is important and I have to start getting this out, getting my team involved. And I'm counting the cost of coding and I don't even know what that really means per se.
Right.
What approach can I take to this?
Well, I would go back and think of the analogy to building a web page pre WordPress, mm-hmm. right? You'd go out, you'd hire a coder, you'd have a design meeting. Then there'd be a bunch of iterations and the
you'd
coder would
get features,
right? You'd list your features and you do all yeah, that stuff. And yeah. it was expensive and yeah. prohibitive.
Yeah.
In extended reality, we are beyond that point.
Mm-hmm.
The coding is decreased. The need for coding is decreasing constantly. The way that we think of this at Mindspring is we really think of it in 3 buckets. So we think of it as we build. So in other words, we have a client that comes to us, like in that pre-WordPress thing, and says, we don't know how to do this. Here's what we want it to look like. We build it, and then we go through that iterative mm-hmm. thing. The next possibility is that you build it. So a client comes to us, says, you guys have really cool software, which does amazing things, which we do. And which is proprietary and built by us. And we want to use your software. We want to license it. We know we can take it from here.
Right.
It's
right.
it's post WordPress now.
Right. Yes.
Right. I just need to be creative. We have the expertise to do it. Again, coding is less.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there's where most companies and learning people are. They're understanding that we don't want to do a we build. We don't want to outsource every single
right.
AR and VR. If this is a thing that's coming in the future, we don't yep. want to be constantly outsourcing everything. So we've come up with a we build, you build, or we build together. And we build together is basically us teaching how the software works so that we're doing 2 things simultaneously. One is we are building a project that they need, but secondly, we are teaching them how to use the tools that are available.
Yeah.
And over time, it starts with probably 95% of us building, and it ends with probably 95% of them building, where we go from expert to coach, their expertise is rising. And so that that we build, you build, we build together thing, I think is reflective of where the industry is mm-hmm. right now, and a little bit of that scary,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't feel quite prepared to take this on by myself. I don't want to turn over, I don't want to outsource every single project that we're ever going to do.
Right, right.
And so we came up with that we build together concept as a way to bring people up to speed so that their own, and once you start playing with the tools and you have an expert in your back pocket, and you can ask, your confidence level goes way up because these tools at the end of the day aren't all that scary. They're just new.
Right. I put myself in the role of a learning, you know, an L&D manager. That feels a lot more comfortable because because I do want to build the capacity on my team. You know, I have maybe team members who have some expertise in this right. and have been itching to get to it.
True.
But I don't really understand that. So I can't 100% turn them loose.
But well, and there's a risk to doing that too, right?
Is. Yeah.
You hand your learning team this tool and they build a substandard experience. Yes.
No funding next year.
You know what happens next.
Be real.
Right? I mean, they're going to go, that was awful.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have to build a quality thing, and you need people who know how to design it, how to use the software. And some of it is just knowing the options, right?
Yes.
Have you guys thought about this?
Right. You can do this. Yeah.
It's doable and it's cool and it'll get exactly what you need. So, I mean, over time, it goes from, it may start out as a we build, and then it might go to a we build together. And as you build your competencies in doing that, at some point it's a you build, and you're just licensing software at that point.
No, I love that. And I, from a Mindspring perspective, I mean, part of the reason we love this approach is, you know, in our heart too, we are learner-centric. We're always learning. And so we enjoy coming alongside partners, I think, and helping them see how to do it. And we learn from them too.
Right.
So that's absolutely, that's a cool approach. And I think, so we're talking about building, and I will also tell our listeners, in the show notes, we will put a link or maybe a QR code. We'll see what Jeff has to say, but a sample video that demonstrates like quite a few different just experiences that we've built. But I want to talk about that. So from a learning, so if you're an instructional designer, you're a learning experience designer. So it might not be me. I'm in charge of really figuring out how to design the experience. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time we did this, and we knew it wasn't going to be linear, but you sit down with a traditional storyboard or however else you think to build it. And they're like, wait a second, when I walk into this room, potentially there could be 85 different things that happen. How do I design for that? How do I, like, that's not a linear, you know, I don't even say click this slide. I mean, even when we design complex e-learning, there's still a limited amount of branching or scenarios. Right. And now potentially the door is just thrown wide open and we could do anything. So there's still a ton of design in this, because learning design, we have to figure out what should the possible options be and somewhat limit those or not, depending on what our goals are, right? That's very vague.
We've both seen this, right?
Right.
Where the technology eats the design, where you
think
the technology is the design. The technology is a tool. You still have to have learning science. You still have to have solid design principles. All those things are still in play, and this is a fun tool you get to play with.
Yeah.
But this is not going to, if you can take the greatest tool in the world and have bad design, you're going to end up with a bad experience.
Agreed.
Right? You can take great design and have moderate tools, and you can end up with a great learning experience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If you can do great design plus unbelievably cool tools, then you have something really interesting.
Absolutely. No, that's, and I would say one of the biggest things, if you're leading a team or dabbling in this, one of the best things you can do is just keep trying little things. I mean, I remember when we designed our first experience, it wasn't until, put myself out here, I put the headset on and realized, oh, I don't really know how to use these controllers.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, oh, we need to design a tutorial.
Right.
Before this starts, and what does that look like, and can it be woven into the experience? Now, that was for virtual reality, right? So some stuff is more intuitive and it's out there in the market now, but there's a lot of learning science that goes into this. Some virtual reality or even AR experiences are so real, like you said, you evoke almost so much emotion that you, it's almost too powerful. It's overwhelming. Or you have to be aware.
A little bit of cognitive overload.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
That's what I was experiencing.
Yes. And different people process those things differently, but being aware even of that is an important thing as a learning experience designer. So, and then my question is too, how do I evaluate this, right? Like there's multiple ways to do this. This is not a typical knowledge check. This is not even a more advanced, I'm practicing, I'm doing role playing, and there's a rubric. Did I do it? Like, how do I evaluate an experience like this?
Game theory helps. I think when you have very, definitive objectives, you have choices that you want people to make. But I think the evaluative Matrix isn't all that different from traditional learning or digital learning, depending on the application. So let's say that you're trying to onboard people, right? You're going to care about two metrics. You're going to care about speed to proficiency, and you're going to be concerned about their dropout rate.
Right.
So
that's
you,
true.
You want to keep your recruits, because recruits, especially right now, are very hard to find. And you want them, instead of taking 28 days to be proficient, if you can take it down to 21 days, that's measurable, it's demonstrable, and you can attach a dollar figure to it. And so there are ways to measure the use of this tool in the same metrics and rubric that are available in anything else. Same thing with wayfinding, right? Same thing with, you can send an expectant mother a map of a hospital, and you'll find that they're very confused. If they can find their way, and they have an app on their phone through AR, and it can lead them to the delivery room and to the nursery and to where the snack thing is and where the room is, and you can apply that to any patient, I suppose. Inspect and collect, right? Same thing. If you can greatly reduce the number of defects in your manufacturing process by an augmented reality solution, or you can reduce the number of mistakes that are being made in a manufacturing process, or mistakes, which is horrifying, but in medical, right? And there's all sorts of wonderful metrics. They're the same metrics. Apply the same matrix to it.
Well, that's one thing I found so interesting, specifically in medical. Like in other fields, like manufacturing, or like you said, when you're testing for skills, then whether it's in person or in the, maybe they have to demonstrate afterwards in person, or you can tell pretty quick they did or they didn't do it correctly and why, or we have rubrics or simulations. Yep. But in the medical field, what I think is really interesting, and honestly, this does apply elsewhere, but the ability to gather data very quickly and then almost become more predictive. So what I was reading was talking about, to your example, again, a surgeon. So how many times do they do this wrong thing? Mm-hmm. And when we see that happening over and over and over again in this simulation, we can very quickly design tools or whatever it is to help that mistake not happen. And we have real-time feedback, and we can predict, first time, in this situation, they often do this. How can we change that so that doesn't happen again? And so I think the ability to get, as opposed to, you're just like reading a book and taking a quiz on it. And we can tell 60% of people got this question wrong, but it doesn't tell me why they got it wrong, or like that observation you can see when people are doing things in an immersive environment.
Yeah, you made me think of something interesting there. Don't think that extended reality is going to necessarily take the place of other forms of learning.
Absolutely.
You might actually put a virtual reality experience at the very beginning to create some dissonance and level of uncomfortability where people go, ooh,
that's of urgency.
Really bad.
Yes.
And now you have an open mind.
Yep.
You could use it in the middle to reinforce something you're already doing. You could use it at the end as an advanced form of knowledge check. So you've learned it, now demonstrate to me in virtual reality that you can do it. So it's not binary. It's not either all this or all that. I think when this is done well, extended reality is mixed into, and again, back to that tool thinking, right? Is this the right tool for this particular thing, or is this a tool inside of a tool matrix where we're going to do four things, and this is really cool and it fits right here?
That's one of the reasons we wanted to unpack this, right? Make it less scary. I mean, we're talking about new technology, but in large part, our evaluation models are the same. We're still designing a learning experience. Yep. We have probably more powerful immersive tools at our fingertips now, which allows us to evaluate at a higher level. But we're still employing many of those same methods and strategies we did in the past.
It's a tool. Don't let the tool eat good instructional design.
Right. I know that's your favorite thing to say, which is because we see it happen all the time.
It does. And everybody's like, there's a magic panacea and this is going to fix everything. No, it's not. You have to come back to good design. You have to come back to good learning science and then make the best use of the tools that you can. But this is not a replacement for good instructional design.
Right. No, absolutely not. In fact, if anything, my experience has been it requires a very skilled instructional designer, learning experience mm-hmm. designer to design these well.
Yep.
So, okay. So we have identified, and it is true, right? Like cost mm-hmm. is an issue here. Costs are coming down, but it's still something to be considered, and we're not, otherwise everyone would be doing it all the time.
Right.
So how do I defend my spend, right? How do I determine ROI for a situation when I want to use, or I feel it's really important to mm-hmm. use immersive yep. technology.
So in some way you would use the same metrics that you've used in the past. You determine what your key metrics are. Mm. You establish a baseline, you introduce the experience. If you're a bit sophisticated, you'll do a control group.
I was going to say, this is begging for control
group. Yeah, right. Yeah. It's nice to have a control group and say, these people didn't, let's just pick onboarding. These people took 35 days to get to proficiency. These people took 13. It's a very easy calculation to say, this is how much it costs per day. This is how many people went mm-hmm. through that. This is how much money we can save. I think we are to the tipping point where cost, because like the software that we have, for instance, requires almost no coders.
Right. Yeah.
It is unique. WordPress.
Yeah. Yeah. To be clear, it's not actually WordPress.
It is not WordPress. No, I know. That's a very good point. Right. It's like that in the sense that it's more about your ability to be creative than it is mm-hmm. about your ability to code. So as the coding expense gets taken out, I don't think the barrier to entry is the top barrier to entry right now.
Yeah, no.
Is expense. And I don't think it will be in the future. Mm-hmm. I think the barrier to entry is this uncomfortable, what do I do with this? I don't know how to use this tool. I don't know how it works. Hence the you build, we build, we build together.
Right.
But the ROI should, if this is a tool in your toolbox, you should be able to demonstrate the ROI here exactly like you would on any other learning experience, from an infographic to ILT to VILT to digital learning to all sorts of other things.
Well, and I would suggest, I mean, if you are really looking to use this, because again, not just because it's new and shiny, but it's important and you have various use cases, you know that it would be very powerful. My suggestion, if you want to make a splash and impress your CFO, is do something in production and manufacturing, because when you can demonstrate that right. you're not shutting down a line for a day and a half and that dollar amount is real obvious real fast. So that's a way to make a splash, just a suggestion.
So I know this great story, and I don't think I've ever told it publicly before. I have a friend who is in charge of virtual reality at a university, mm-hmm. and he was trying to convince the administration that this was the way to go. And the administrator, the president of the university said, well, we have to go to the board. I mean, this is a big decision. If we're going to make this transition to a significant increase in the number of courses and the way that we're delivering to virtual reality. So he decided to give all of to call a board meeting. He had an hour or two. He presented offsite. He gave all of them virtual reality headsets, brought them into a virtual room mm-hmm. and made a virtual presentation on virtual reality using virtual technology. And it was unanimous.
Yeah.
Because he had brought them in and said, this is the kind of, we can bring people in from all over the world. Look, I can show this chart in virtual reality and you can see it
and manipulate it.
Right. Yeah. It was wonderfully convincing. And that entire university has made mm-hmm. is making the shift to primary delivery method of their education via virtual reality, which is darn impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was probably 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So the technology itself has made huge strides even from then.
Way different.
So yeah.
Way better.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So I think today, I mean, our main goal was really to sort of lessen the scary, so mm-hmm. to speak. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about the big buckets and the definitions. Hopefully people should feel more comfortable with that. A better understanding of where the industry is, some of the barriers and why those shouldn't be barriers. How design is in some ways very much the same, mm-hmm. evaluation, you know, ROI. And then in some ways where it's very different because we have like this nonlinear approach. I think that's a very good place to stop in terms of high level comfort level. You know, we're a resource. We're happy to build with any of our listeners. And then in the next podcast, we're going to kind of dig into the weeds for those of you listening that really want to hear that. But Jerry, do you have any last thoughts, anything you want to share specifically on this topic?
We're very early. Mm-hmm. We're still very early. And I think where we'll be 5 years from now is going to be stunning. So I would encourage those who are listening to keep reading, keep thinking, find a way to play with it. We're happy to provide some of that help too, but find a way to start playing with some of these alternative realities.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great way to, and that actually segues well. We always ask our guests at the end, you know, what are you learning well now? But in your case, Jerry, I did want to ask you kind of tailored to this, because I know when we started talking about this probably over a year, and we talked about it all along, but like a really deeper mm-hmm. dive about a year ago, it was not something that you or I felt really, we understood the concept, but we didn't feel really comfortable. And mm-hmm. for our listeners, what are some things you did to sort of help you understand yeah. better?
Reading was part of it, but part of it, again, was the realization that this, we are not restructuring how humans learn. Mm-hmm. We are not throwing out design. We are not throwing out learning science. This is a tool. I don't know how my TV works either.
Right.
Right. I don't know how my, I don't know how Pandora works. There's right. lots of things I don't know how, but I know how to use them. Mm-hmm. And when you make that shift from the intimidating, like the complexity of this thing and how do I, you know, how do I do this? And you start thinking about how can I use this? How can this be an effective tool for mm-hmm. me? The skies got pretty clear pretty fast. When you let your imagination do what it's supposed to do and think about what is possible, you can always find coders. You can always find software. Right. You can always find the tools. The tools are inanimate objects, right? Mm-hmm. And once I started, I can only speak for me, but once I started thinking about it like that, I was like, yeah, okay, this I can get my head around this.
Yeah, and I think the technology has also, it used to be very segmented, but now we see so much, you know, especially with the experts within our company, you know, just helping us better understand. It's a layering. It doesn't have to be just a virtual reality Mm-mm. or just an AR experience, or we have the ability to layer those together. Like you said, then your imagination really takes mm-hmm. off and you just start to think about possibilities and
gets less scary.
Yeah, exactly. And I know you played around with a lot of it too. And I think that is key, like getting your hands on some equipment mm-hmm. and trying some different experiences and seeing how that felt.
Yep. All yep. Right. Big deal. Just to go play.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, that's, and I mean, I guess we have access to that, but, mm-hmm. and maybe not everyone does, but there are ways that you can get your hands on that. Or I, some of this I learned, I was listening to some different podcasts about it. Yeah. I mean, there's like VR stores in your local strip malls. You can Absolutely. Go for half an hour and yeah. just kind of get your hands around some of it.
So, yep. Yeah. I was meeting with some high school students on technology issues and, within a week, more than half of them had gone out, bought fairly inexpensive mm-hmm. Headsets, and were starting to play.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Or they already have them too.
Yeah. And 2 weeks later, they knew more about it
exactly,
than I did.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jerry. So yeah. It's always a pleasure. It's just good to talk through this issue. And I think just lower that scare level, mm-hmm. make people feel more comfortable. I'm always so excited to see what's coming next. And again, for our listeners, we'll put a link in the show notes that really, I think, will just kind of capture your imagination, watch some video, get some different ideas. But for our listeners, we thank you for listening today. If you're looking to interact more with us, you can find our posts on MindSpring's Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, every time we release a podcast. So we know your time is a gift and we appreciate you spending it with us. Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.